Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Cause and Effect Radio, brought to you by UHY Advisors. Now, here's your hosts.
Welcome to Cause and Effect Radio. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you today. Lee, this is going to be a fantastic segment for today's show. We have with us from UHY Advisors, Dave King, no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone and the Cause and Effect show. And we also have Vice President with ISU Paragon, Mr. Matt Holcomb. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us, Stone.
Thank you. Welcome.
Well, Dave, today's topic is going to be cybersecurity, specifically the anatomy of a cyber heist. Can you talk about that a little bit? What does a cyber heist even mean?
Sure. Well, let's begin with that first word, anatomy, right? So we associate anatomy with the human body.
Right.
What we want to do is place an emphasis on this big, sophisticated thing called cybersecurity.
Right.
We want to drill it down to the humans that are affected by
right, because a lot of people, they just hear that and it just kind of glosses over them. It sounds too complicated, too large for them to comprehend.
That's right. I think when you read in the headlines a breach of a specific organization,
right,
typically they all fit the same profile, right? Mm-hmm. So it's typically large businesses that are right. publicly traded, and they say X hundreds of thousands of dollars of records got stolen. This breach is going to cost X amount of dollars with some assumptions made there. You know, what we try to emphasize is these headlines don't talk about the people that are affected. They don't talk about the layoffs, right? They don't talk about the real human impact that a breach has on an organization. You know, 9 times out of 10, the breaches that we see in the headlines, again, there are very large organizations, but many more businesses in the healthy middle market get breached.
But that don't make the news.
They never make the news.
Right.
They're not newsworthy breaches. But you can certainly bet there's real people that get affected mm-hmm. in these breaches. And we're talking about layoffs. You know, I think for me, it's a very painful experience to go into an organization as they're handing out cardboard boxes.
Right. Well, this is something that, again, we're reading it at maybe at a superficial level, and maybe it's happening frequently enough where we're not even paying that much attention because we just think that's just the normal cost of doing business, that this is going to happen periodically. And you're saying that, and for especially the mid-market, this is happening way more frequently than we realize, and it's impacting people at the human level with, you know, people losing their jobs because of the ramifications of this?
That's exactly right. So, you know, this is not happening at a snail's pace.
Right.
This is happening at a rocket ship pace. We are seeing an exponential increase in breaches occurring with businesses in the middle market.
So now, is this something that, I mean, what's your role? Like, how does UHY impact this?
Sure. So I'm one of the leaders of our cybersecurity risk management practice. Mm-hmm. The best case scenario for us is that we can go into a business and help them identify and manage cybersecurity risks before they're breached.
So you're like a preventative.
That's right. Right.
So you're trying to kind of work on this before it becomes an issue.
That's right. So we're trying to help executives in these organizations manage cybersecurity risk with a proactive nature.
Right.
You know, I think a lot of business executives place a significant over-reliance on their IT department to manage
to solve
their
this
cybersecurity
problem. Because in their mind, this cybersecurity villain is some person in another country just like tapping on a keyboard somewhere.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think that we tend to conjure this image of teenagers in hoodies. Right?
There's a lot of movies where that happens.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it makes for great TV.
Right.
Yeah. Right. The fact of the matter is that hackers don't look like teenagers in hoodies. They actually look more like project managers. Project management makes for very bad TV.
Right.
But the footprint and the profile of the activities of these hackers, this is very well-organized project management. You know, you can think of hackers as a as running a for-profit organization, and for-profit organizations are there to make money. So they have time, they have resources, they invest time and resources into a specific type of return. That return is stealing money and data from companies in the middle market.
Right. And that's the thing that these companies probably aren't realizing. While this company is doing its business, being a manufacturer or doing, you know, medical device or whatever they're doing every day, and that's what they're thinking of 24/7, these bad guys are thinking about how to breach into companies, right? That's
right.
What they're whiteboarding on the wall.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the reason why the middle market businesses are the most vulnerable is because at present they tend to have the most complacent posture, right? Mm-hmm. I've done it a number of times where I go into an organization, I present to the board, and I say, who in your organization is responsible for cybersecurity?
Right. And they all look at each other, hoping someone raises their hand.
They all look at each other, and sometimes there's finger pointing in completely different directions.
Right. I thought Bob did that.
That's exactly right. So they call in their IT guy, and so I speak to their IT guy, and I say, so how do you prevent somebody from your accounts payroll department from sending out an unauthorized invoice accidentally? What tool do you have that prevents that? There is no firewall that can prevent a exploit on a business process.
So that's not even in their radar usually.
That's not even in their radar. The one thing that comes close is what we call the human firewall.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what I like to say to organizations is very simply, we go in and we help you build and improve on the most important firewall in your organization, and that's your people.
So, but they, a lot of times I'm sure they think, and that's what I, off the top of my head that comes to me is like, oh, I'll just get software or some sort of a technology that's going to protect me
from this. Yeah, that's right. Again, over-reliance on tools and technology to manage what's actually a human-based risk. You know, I'd like to say that systems are incredibly difficult to exploit. People are very easy.
And is that that's probably something you have to make them aware of. That's not top of mind for your typical new prospect or new client.
That's right.
You have to educate them in this area.
That's right.
Because they, in their head, I'm sure they're relying on some technology to solve this problem. And you're saying a lot of the focus should be on human beings.
That's right. Yeah. And a lot of organizations will also say, well, we have IT that handles that. Or they'll say, and I mentioned the term complacency, they'll say, well, my organization isn't really a target for hackers because I'm just a textile company, right? I don't process credit cards. I don't have
There's nothing here
HR
for them that they would want.
What's there for me, right? Well, I like to say that every business, and I mean every business, regardless of public, private, even not-for-profit, they've got a couple of things in common. Every business in this country. The first is money and data always go into the business. Money and data always go out.
Right.
And they're all connected to the internet. So you show me a business that doesn't have money and data going in and out and isn't connected to the internet, and I will question whether or not that actually is a business. I'll question whether or not that actually exists.
Right.
Right. So long as you have no money or data going in or out of your business and you're not connected to the internet, you have nothing to
worry
about. You can sleep good at night.
Cash only.
The Amish are sleeping well.
That's right. Yes. That's right. But if what I'm saying is true and your organization does have money and data going in and out, and you're connected to the internet, you're a target.
You better pay attention. Now, isn't it important to first even just be aware of, okay, what are really the most important things we have? What are the assets that we have to really wall off and protect to make sure that no one could get a hold of this?
Yeah, that's right.
Because sometimes they don't realize, they might take it for granted that, like you said, well, they're not credit card numbers, so, you know, we don't have to pay that much attention over here, but it could be critical to their business operation.
That's right. So one of the things that we do at UHY when we do a cybersecurity risk assessment is we go in and we help them identify what the crown jewels of their organization are.
And every business has it.
Every business has it. You know, every business, if they don't store, process, or transmit credit cards, and they don't store employee personnel HR files, they have some type of proprietary secret sauce that makes that business run,
mm-hmm.
right? Even not-for-profits, right? Their call lists, that's a crown jewel.
Yeah.
That's a crown jewel, right? So part of what UHY does is we first go in and we inventory what those data elements are and what those crown jewel business processes are. And then we inventory what's being done to manage the risk that's associated with that. One of the things that we, you know, look at is also, have you done an inventory over your insurance policies, right? So the insurance policies in the organization, here's your crown jewels. It's not a matter of if, but when you get breached. Are you protected just from a insurance standpoint? Are you protected from that? I think Matt.
Yeah, why don't we bring Matt in
here today to
good morning.
Really begin to speak on this.
Well, yeah. Matt Holcomb with ISU Paragon. You're in the insurance business.
Correct.
Right? This is a situation that is, like Dave was saying, it's not if, it's when.
Correct.
Right. And you can't just put your head in the sand and hope it's not you. Hope is not a strategy, as they say, right?
Yeah, and a lot of businesses are just one claim away from losing everything. And what I mean by that is, like David was saying, they don't have the proper tools set in place to educate their employees, the insurance in place, because that's another thing that once you've been breached, the insurance takes over.
Right. There's like getting a DUI, right?
Correct.
This is what you better prepare for this before it happens.
Yes.
Than after you're in, it's a new world.
Yeah. And like I say, if you're right, mm-hmm. if it's already happened to you, you've already been breached, you're going to be very hard pressed to find a carrier is going to want to take you.
So it's treated like it's considered the equivalent of like a pre-existing condition,
correct.
You're saying.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And every carrier is going to ask, what procedures do you have in place to protect against XYZ?
Right.
What kind of education do you give to your employees for them to understand the importance of XYZ? And that's, like I say, where David and UHY come into play as far as they give the information to the client and say, this is where you need to be, you know, work harder on, and this is what you need to have in place, and then we can come in and implement that, bring in the insurance aspect to protect against. It's not, like I say, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
But when you're working with a client that doesn't have this type of insurance coverage, are you kind of looking for problem areas, or is that part of what you do, like consult with them and saying, hey, you know what, we're going to do this, but you better fix this before we can...
Yes.
Consider you, like, you have to do that, because otherwise that's too much risk for you guys, right?
Correct.
They don't have good processes in place.
Right. And the insurance companies are going to request this. They're going to say what, like I said, the application will have questions on it. It'll discuss.
So you're looking for kind of holes.
Yes. We're looking for holes, and we're looking for what they do in order to fill, because it's not a one size fits all when it comes to
cyber
insurance.
Right. Because every business has their own complexity and their own processes.
Right. You also have wrapped into a of cyber insurance, you'd also have professional liability. So any advice you give to a client, say, we think, like in the situation with David, I'm sure they have professional liability to protect against any advice that he gives to XYZ company to say, hey, this is what you need. And that XYZ company comes back and says, this didn't work. We're now going to sue you. So that's where there's a lot of different components that go in to fix or to mitigate the risk through insurance. And that's one of the things we try to discuss. We read through their current policies as well and make sure they're complying in a lot of different areas, because sometimes you'll find there may be an overlap and they may not need that coverage at that time. But as they grow, we come back and discuss with them and explain, okay, now you've gone from $1 million company to a $10 million company. Now you're going to be more vulnerable to attacks. And like he was saying, it's not the big companies initially going after. It's the small, medium size. It's any size that they can get money out of.
Right.
And
so now walk me through what that conversation looks like when you meet somebody that is a prospect for you or is considering doing this.
We usually try to explain to them in the beginning, we want at least an hour and a half to 2 hours of their time. If they don't think they're going to be able to do it, then let's reschedule a time where we can sit down and literally read through your policies, look at everything that you have in place. And then from there, we'll bring back and say, okay, from what you're doing, you're going to need a third party policy to protect for the cyber. We're going to need a first party, all these different things. You know, some companies we have will send out employees into another company's, like a placement agency almost. They'll mm-hmm. send out IT gentlemen to, say, large companies here in Atlanta to do work. There's a requirement from that company that states that they have to have certain limits in place on the insurance before they'll even let the person in the door. So you'll run into the fact a lot of times where these companies don't even know it. And then you say, well, let's see all of your contracts that you've signed already with XYZ companies. And they'll hand them to us. And we're like, okay, right here, you're not compliant. You're right now, you've already signed a contract with this company saying you right. have these.
And you're out of compliance.
Yes. You have these limits in place to protect because the company's not, the company that you're sending them into is not going to want to take the hit for something that your employees right. have done. So you've got to push through to get them up to that standard to say, okay, now you're compliant, but here's your new premium. And sometimes that can be a shock, but it's like you said earlier, it's the price of doing business.
Right. How often, Matt, when you go in and you do an inventory of insurance policies by a company, and then you do an inventory of their business model, how often do you see gaps where you have to have an awkward conversation? What they thought they had isn't even close to what they actually have from a coverage point of view.
Probably 85 to 90% of the time.
That's wow. interesting.
It's a large number.
So
now, why is that? Is that just a miscommunication, or they're making false assumptions? Like, how could it be that high?
Companies can become complacent. They look at it and say, okay, we've been in business for 10 years now, 5 years, and we've had this insurance policy.
Oh, so it's the same insurance policy. They're just not changing
Correct.
It as they've evolved.
They're not updating. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's mm-hmm. one of the things we like to do is we try to meet with our large clients once a year.
Right, you have to. Because, I mean, how do you deal with all the outsourcing that's going on? How many companies are sending out outside vendors to go and do work for them on their behalf?
Right.
I mean, in the actual offices of these people,
right.
their clients.
Right. Well, right? You know, I think it's important to point out that business models aren't becoming simpler.
Right.
right.
Right. Business models aren't becoming simpler. Businesses are relying now more than ever on subservice organizations and third-party vendors
right.
to help them with their, you know, with their company. It's not uncommon to see an org chart where we say we outsource the HR function, we outsource the IT function. You know, it's not uncommon for me to see organization charts that look pretty flat and have nobody really, like the CFO is also the CIO and the CTO. That's fine. Businesses are becoming more complex, right? And as a result, you know, it behooves them to assess their business processes on a recurring basis and to assess things like their insurance policies on a frequent basis. Now, I mean, you know, Matt mentioned, you know, this statistic of, you know, probably about 85% of the companies that he speaks with, he has to have he tells them something that they don't already know, just as a result of this assessment.
Just by reading the policy.
Correct. Right.
I share. It's not like he's doing a deep dive. Yeah,
that's about what I would expect. I mean, classic 80-20 rule, right? So I'd wager that 80% of the time when we go into businesses and we begin to assess their cybersecurity risks, their people, their business processes, and to a degree, some of the tools that they do have in place to mitigate some of the cybersecurity risk, I every time I wind up telling the CEO of the organization something that they don't already know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably something they knew, but just things have changed since they knew it. It's not top of mind.
That's right.
And the company shifted or changed, pivoted, whatever you want to call it, and they're going by the old stuff, and then it's a new world for them.
That's right. Yeah. So as an example of that, I did an assessment fairly recently where I began to discuss how a company stores and transmits credit card data.
Mm-hmm.
One of the leaders in the organization swore up and down, my line of business doesn't touch credit cards. Absolutely right. Not. We don't even come close. So I drilled down in the organization. I interviewed a few people, and I just sat and wrote co-pilot with one of their collections agents. And I watched their collections agent take credit card numbers over the phone, write it down in a notepad, put the notepad in their desk drawer, and clack it into the computer, into the online payment system.
Later, at some future point.
Later, at some future
maybe
point.
Maybe at a coffee shop or their house.
Right. So I brought the ledger back to the business line manager of the organization.
Positive.
Who was absolutely positive. And I said, did you know your line of business absolutely stores cardholder data? This is the cardholder data.
But the good news is it's not in a computer. It's in Bob's.
Yes. That's right. Well, it wound up leading to a change in the business process,
mm-hmm.
right? So it wasn't Bob, don't write down credit cards anymore. It was we need to coach our customers to not call Bob and to give Bob their credit card number.
Right.
We need to coach our customers to log into the website.
And that's how that's supposed to happen.
That way.
Right. But again, right. If you're Bob and you're in a sales role or you're in some customer facing role, you're trying to serve and the person wants to pay and
that's
they're
right.
like, hey, I got my credit card and he's
right.
just trying to help. He's not like he's a bad guy. He's
no,
just
that's
trying
right.
to watch the back of the business to facilitate the payment.
That's exactly right. So, you know, hackers use the path of least resistance. Right. One of those paths of least resistance are phone systems in companies. There are common use cases where there's hacker taps on the phone system. So if a department in your organization is taking credit card numbers over the phone,
mm-hmm.
your phone system is in scope for PCI compliance and has to be assessed to make sure that it's not being tampered with. Right. Makes sense. Organizations just don't really apply this type of cybersecurity lens to these, what I call, seemingly innocuous business processes.
Right.
We're in a new world. Businesses are not becoming simpler. Hackers are becoming more and more diligent in their effort because the profit is so high. Right. So they're going to do anything that it takes and whatever it takes to get in there and steal credit card numbers, steal personnel data, and to, you know, reroute invoices. They're going to monetize that effort. And there's a strong incentive for them to do it.
Now, can you guys share stories or a story that is maybe there? This isn't the one that makes the news, but is more of a real life way that this is occurring. Like do they just call the company and ask for some information? Somebody just gives them the information. Like, what is like happening really in real life? Not, you know, kind of this.
Sure. I've got a handful of use cases. Matt, do you want to give one of yours, and we'll
sure.
just do a quick use case exchange?
Here. Sure. Probably about 10 years ago, of a company that I knew, no names mentioned.
Sure.
They actually had a computer that was hooked up to their network that sat in a cubicle for God only knows how long, and never been touched, never been updated, no software, no nothing.
So it was on.
It was on.
And it was just
running.
And maybe somebody worked in that cubicle at one point, or maybe they moved, or whatever the case is,
whatever
it was just sitting there.
Just sitting there running.
Right.
And since there's no software updates ever, that's the way a hacker was able to get into it and then compromise, you know, 20, 30,000 records of people's personal identification.
So now, how would the hacker know that that was occurred? Like there was a computer sitting there?
It could be a number of ways. They could have software for themselves. They could actually go in and find a link in a vast security system and say, okay, there's a weak spot here.
So they can identify that from another country.
Yes. Hackers are usually 1 to 2 steps ahead of most of what's mm-hmm. going on that are trying to prevent it. I mean, their vulnerability is mind-blowing how scary it can be. It's just like we were saying, it's not a when. It's not a matter of if. It's just a matter of when it happens to you.
So now they identify, oh, there's a weak link.
Yes.
Here's this computer.
And they go in
by itself. They go in there, and then what do they do typically?
They take all the information they want. They could take a personal information, social security numbers, addresses, dates of birth.
So they can take what's on the hard drive of that specific like desktop unit, or they can get into the actual network and access.
They get into the network. That's their key.
They can use that as a launch pad.
Yes, to go into the big picture and get everything they want, because that's hooked up to the network, and that's a technically it's a secure.
Right.
Unsecure computer, if that makes sense.
Because they weren't updating the security.
Correct.
Right. And then so they're in there now. Now, are they just downloading all the stuff off of the network into their own kind of cloud?
Yes. And someone's alerted at some point that there's been a breach, and now we have to take action. You know, and they can find out exactly how many files were compromised.
So now, at some point, so then you're saying the technology of that company is going to go, hey, what's going on here? Somebody's downloading all kinds of stuff here.
You hope.
But it could. That's not something that's instantaneous. It could be something it 24 hours later, you would get, hey, something just happened in Wichita.
Yes, and immediately you need to alert. Immediately they would need to alert their insurance department, risk management, everybody to get.
Right.
Because you have to send out letters to every single client letting them know we've had a compromise. Here is what you can do to prevent it. They'll give you a free credit check, all these different things. But that's something the insurance plays a role in, because if you don't do this, you're talking $200, $300 per file fine from the government. So it could, if you have 100,000 files, you're looking at a big ticket that you have to spend out. So that's one of the things that you need to immediately jump on and as quickly as possible.
Yeah, it adds up to
the fines are what get you. You have the breach, the data loss, obviously, but then the fines is just the cherry on top there.
You're also your reputation.
Reputation. Well,
and trust that people have in you to ever give you any more information. So that's another way a company can go under, is just from that alone.
Sure. And, the fines affect the organization. The people in that organization that could potentially get laid off as a result of having to pay those fines, that's where it really hits home.
And you've seen that happen.
Absolutely. So, the one case that comes to mind that just really, really hit home for me was a breach that, we helped the company after the breach sort of shore up their processes, and we built a training and awareness program for them. This particular exploit, not a single system in the organization got hacked. The firewall did not get penetrated. Malware was not installed on any computer, so far as we could find, in the entire organization.
Right.
The breach, we'll call it a social breach, was discovered literally at the water cooler. So two people get up, go to the water cooler, and someone says, Jane, how was your weekend? Oh, I had the worst weekend ever. I was trying to file my taxes, and it looks like somebody filed my taxes for me. I'm kind of going through this identity theft thing. It's just been awful for me and my family. The person that Jane was speaking to, said, that's crazy. I had the exact same weekend that you had. What are the odds of that?
Really?
A head pops up out of a cubicle. I heard you guys talking about somebody filing your taxes. I just went through that about a week ago, and my identity has been stolen, and people have been applying for credit cards in my name, and this thing's been a nightmare. It spread like wildfire through the organization. The employees in the organization knew that they had been exploited before executive leadership had realized that this was something that the business was actually responsible for. What had happened was months earlier, right? So this conversation started happening around, I believe, around mid-February.
Right, around tax time.
Right.
When they start figuring stuff out.
In October, for fall break, the CFO took off on a beach trip. And the CFO is very visible on social media. So family photos of family on a Tuesday at the beach. Right. The executive assistant of the CFO received an email that looked like it came from the CFO that said, hey, while I'm in Puerto Rico, right, so, I would like you to send me a spreadsheet of all of our personnel files, because I want to begin having the conversation of distributing bonuses for the end of the year. So she compiled a spreadsheet. So,
and this was not anything that you would think, wow, this is probably a fraud.
This is I know that the CFO is in Puerto Rico.
Right.
It's time to start having bonus conversations. Nothing seems out of the ordinary. Of course, I will send you a unprotected spreadsheet of all 5,000 employees in the organization.
What could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? Now, I ask you, what firewall in the organization could have prevented that?
Right. Unless there's a way to protect, because they're obviously, had they get the email, they were somehow
LinkedIn and Facebook.
But they had his actual, they can send an email that appears to be from his real email.
It's very, very easy to send an email that the from signature looks like it came from someone that it didn't actually come from. It's called spoofing. It's very easy to spoof an email, and it's very hard to block against those, right? So, you know, this is a perfect use case of the human firewall is what was exploited here. But not a single system in the organization.
So what would have protected them from this case?
So we talk about inventorying the crown jewels of your organization, right? We absolutely interview and assess risks associated with the HR function, right? How is your personnel data protected?
Right.
And then we assess, well, do you know that it's a bad idea to send out a spreadsheet that has all 5,000 employees?
So that was data, that was the issue. From this person, I'm trying to be in their shoes. Right. Their boss is saying, send me this.
That's right. So that's where training and awareness is so important to an organization. It only takes one false click. In this instance, the false click was the executive assistant clicking send, right? It only has to happen one time. So you absolutely have to train the people in your organization to say it's okay to push back on an email that looks like it comes from executive leadership.
Right.
Under no circumstance, this is how sensitive data is defined in our organization. Under no instance are you allowed
out in an unsecure manner.
That's right.
Everything has to go through a password protected kind of environment.
That's right.
And that was the gap here.
That was the gap here.
And this person, I really empathize for this person, because you can imagine the boss says, do this, it's important.
Right.
He's a way of making, he wants this stuff. You know, there's a sense of urgency.
That's right.
I mean, it's difficult to say no.
Right. You know? So this costs the business, and this is just a healthy middle market business. The reason why they have 5,000 employees on their roster is 4,500 of those employees are part-time summer workers, right? So businesses are not becoming simpler.
Right.
They're becoming more complex. So this business heavily relies on part-time help during the summer months, right? So they kind of outsource that, but they hold all these personnel records. Mm-hmm. The executive assistant should never have had access to those records, much less to have been able to put them in a spreadsheet and send it out.
Email them.
So multiple faults across the board. Had they undergone a cybersecurity risk assessment in the beginning, I'm completely confident that we would have been able to catch that before it ever happened. And we could have saved, you know, untold hundreds of thousands of dollars for this
and
business.
Hours and hassle and for hours. Every one of those people
Absolutely.
That work there.
And real people affected.
Right.
So
if you've ever gone through one of those identity theft thing, that's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. So for everybody in the company, you know, Matt was talking about reputationally, would you work for a company?
Right.
Imagine how hard it is for them to now recruit.
Right, the trust.
They have a reputation. They rely on summertime employees, and they have a reputation now. It's probably going to be hard for them to hire summertime employees.
Right. Now, Matt, what's the cost of something like that? What would be if they had the insurance versus now they've been breached and now they got to get the insurance?
Well,
I mean, I know you can't give me an exact number, but is that like it costs $1 before and it costs $10 after?
Yeah, your insurance is going to be it's going to be based off of a lot of different equations. Your mm-hmm. company size,
right?
What you have as far as protection, employees numbers. So basically, at that situation, you have, let's say it's $10,000 for mm-hmm. the insurance of $1 million policy,
right.
or even a $10 million policy. It goes up from there, and so without that, you would be paying the fines on your own, all the legal fees, any forensic, and all this stuff that would come into play that would be covered under the insurance. Now it's up to you as the employer, the owner of the company, to pay for it. So yeah, it could be a deal breaker, because you know a lot of people think all these mid-sized companies, they're multimillionaires. That's not necessarily the truth. I mean,
right.
some of them are just like, hey, we're doing okay to get by.
Right.
Our employees are doing great, but it's, you know, as the owner of the business, it's like, okay, we're good. Then all of a sudden this comes in, hits them upside
right.
the head, and it's just...
And they can't absorb that.
Right, right. So a lot of times they'll look at an insurance premium that I bring to them, it's like, that's just too much. It's like, you know, but they don't bat an eye when it comes to a health insurance premium that's 5, 6, 7 times as much right. for the year. So it's sometimes an education going through it with them and explaining them to them the importance of it. You know, we're not here to necessarily make you buy something that you don't need. We're here to educate you and let you understand that this is the reason why
right.
you're going to need
well,
this.
Well, the cost of a breach is just so high.
Yes, there's an example of one just recently that the company paid out $19.1 million in fines. So yes, that's a huge, that was right. one of the largest we've had.
So cost, you know, classic risk management is what's the probability of an incident occurring, and then what's the impact, right? In cybersecurity risk, the probability, the likelihood is nearly certain. The impact is absolutely high. Why organizations want to, you know, some organizations want to still have a complacent posture, it's baffling, right? I mean, it's something, cybersecurity risk, you know, per dollar, managing it proactively is so much cheaper and makes much more business sense to the organization, right, than having to manage it after the breach. And we already know it's near certain that an incident will occur. You businesses and leadership and businesses almost have no control over that aspect. What they do have control over is the magnitude that breach affects them. If you want to take any power, you know, if you want to reserve any power for not if but when, you can sleep at night knowing when it happens, I'm covered in that my data is as secure as it can humanly possibly be. I'm not being gross negligent with the protection of that data. My employees are completely covered. I shouldn't have to worry about layoffs because I had Matt over at ISU Paragon come in, and I know that we're covered from an insurance standpoint. I know that we're covered from a risk management standpoint. Now I can sleep at night.
Now, are there industries or types of businesses that are more vulnerable than others?
So, you know, I short answer is no, right? So if your business has money and data coming in and money and data going out, and you're connected to the internet, you're absolutely vulnerable.
Right. I can see, yeah. like, everybody's vulnerable. That yeah. makes sense. But if you're the bad guy, and if you're, like you said earlier, I'm looking at this as my business.
Yeah.
I'm going to look for ones where the risk is the lowest and the gain is the highest.
Sure.
Right? That's what I'm shooting for.
Right. So it's least, you know, hackers will follow the least path of resistance.
Right.
Right. So they'll, you know, a common target is when folks in the organization that have access to money and data in the organization, when they're visible on social media, right? That certainly aggressively moves up their target profile, right? So, yeah, I think social media is a very powerful tool, and in a lot of ways, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn, just to pick on just the two of them, they're great tools, and they're also great tools for your business. But you absolutely have to understand the risks that are also associated with putting yourself out there.
Right. Right. Just like as an individual, you don't necessarily, as you're on vacation, say, look, I'm in France. And you're telling everybody that you're in France so that no one's in your house. You know,
right.
Like,
that's right.
You might want to send out those pictures when you get back. You know, you don't have to send them as it's happening.
That's right. Yeah.
Like David was saying, they're opportunistic. They're not looking for the big banks or the world domination. They're looking for who they can get, who has the weaknesses, the most weaknesses in certain areas, and they can just get in and take what they need. With Facebook, I've had a situation where people have sent me a friend request, and I'm like, I know you. We're already friends. And they'll ask me, hey, what's up? I'll ask a simple question. How's your son, Bobby? Knowing their kid's name is Rick or Mark. And then there's no response. So I know it's someone who's just trying to get into my information and do whatever. Same situation of what we're talking about with masking. What was it?
Oh, spoofing.
Spoofing. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Do these people ever get caught? I mean, probably their business is pretty low risk, high gain, isn't it? Their business model.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Stone. So a majority of the attacks that we've seen have actually originated from foreign nation states. In many cases, it's actually the nation state that sponsors the attack. North Korea is infamous for being a nation state that sponsors attacks. So let's talk about what it means to be a nation state that sponsors an attack, right? They provide an office building. They provide an internet connection. They provide laptops. They provide training, right? So when you think of people showing up at work every day in briefcases, that's the type of hackers that we're talking about. We're talking about project managers and program managers that are highly skilled and trained to manage complex programs. We're not talking about teenagers in hoodies
just to see if
they can do it for fun.
Not the Hollywood.
You know, we're talking about highly disciplined, highly trained project managers that are the culprits here. And in a country like North Korea, this is a huge profit engine for them. Right? This is, you know, they're very transparent. They're not transparent about much, but they're absolutely transparent about.
Right. Yeah, their tourism industry isn't that strong.
That's
so
right.
They have to generate cash somewhere.
You got to make money. You know, you got to make money where you can. You know, the old analogy is, why do banks get robbed? Because that's where the money's at.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So organizations that don't have appropriate training and awareness in place, right off the bat, they're going to be targets, right off the bat.
And then you're saying that these processes in place have to be there at the operational level, the financial level, you know, at every level of the organization. Yeah. It's not just an IT issue.
That's exactly right. I think that most organizations will have an HR function, an IT function, and some type of accounting function in the organization. And that's true for about 99% of organizations will have those three tiers. Now, it's possible that two of those three tiers could be outsourced.
Or they could be good, and then you have one vulnerability in one area.
Sure. And organizations, it's not uncommon for them to rely on, let's pick on the payroll function. Mm-hmm. So they'll just wholly outsource their payroll function to one of the industry leaders, ADP. We work with them, and we come across ADP instances all the time, and it's just a very large cloud-based payroll provider. So they'll say, well, we don't really have to worry about managing the cybersecurity risk of payroll because we have that outsourced to ADP.
And they have it covered.
Right. So businesses are becoming more complex. They're not becoming simpler. What we just, a recent instance that just happened, clients, was that they wanted to move their payroll function literally out to ADP about 2 weeks after they had implemented it and sent out emails saying, hey, you know, we're good. everyone's going to start getting, ADP is going to handle our payroll from now on. An email went out to every employee in the organization saying, please reply back with your name and social security number.
So anytime there's a change like that, then you're especially
vulnerable. And it's not anything ADP did wrong.
ADP did nothing wrong. No computer was breached in the organization so far as we can tell. And a significant number of employees in that organization did fall for that scheme. Right.
So how do you help them, Matt, in this instance?
In the situation, what we would do is we would obviously, the insurance aspect, after the fact, we would come in and...
But before the fact, would you be there as a trusted advisor to go, hey, we're about to switch payroll. That I feel vulnerable about this. Is there any tips that you can suggest that help us do this smoothly without, you know, with mitigating some of the risk?
Not necessarily, because like I say...
Probably call UHY.
Yes, that would be the first. They would have someone in there to come in there and implement certain.
But you would give them the heads up that if they asked you that, hey, this is something that you don't want to just, you know, just
correct,
you know, plug and play here. You want to do something preventative because you are vulnerable in that window of time when you're switching.
Correct, and you want to make sure that kind of falls back on the education to the employees of understanding that if you receive a strange email.
But that doesn't seem strange. If everybody knows we're switching and then somebody says, hey, you're switching, give me this information. You go, great. This is just some more paperwork I got to deal with.
What's the one thing that every bank tells you? If you receive an email from us, it's not from us. We'll send you a letter in the mail.
Right. But that's the education, though. There's a lot. Look, everybody, not everybody, but I know I'm cynical and have scar tissue, so I don't trust anything. You know, I barely trust you guys and you're sitting next to me. but that I'm that way. But a lot of people are just that comes and then they just trust people.
Yeah. And that's like I said, I mean, it's
they're human beings. Most people are trusting.
Yeah. And that's one of the things we have to become more and more alert and aware of. With internet, with emails, with all these different things. If someone's asking for personal information, question it. You know, that goes back to my saying, when I get a Facebook request and I know I'm already friends with them,
right?
I'll ask them a question.
But what if you weren't already friends, but they were like from your high school?
The way the question came across seemed very weird.
Right. Look, I don't, you know, all of those Nigerian prince emails, right? They purposely do it in a way that's obviously, for a lot of people, a scam.
Sure.
Because they're preying upon the people who go, oh, that sounds reasonable. You know?
Right.
That's who they want to click on it. Yeah. They don't want the person that's, you know, cynical.
I do know somebody got hit by one of those. They hijacked their email, sent it out to a bunch of their friends.
Right.
Just saying, hey, we're over in Europe. We need help. We need money. And all the friends know they travel to Europe, you know, 5-6 times a year and sent money. Because they didn't think anything of it. So yeah, it's almost like you feel, gosh, I feel duped. But it's like, you know what? You're right. It goes back to the trust issue. If I get something that's an email to me, I kind of think it's important and I trust it. And it's really difficult to sometimes take a step back and say, well, let me think about this. Let me send a question to them. Let me call ADP. Let me call my HR department. That would be something you would explain to through education to the employees.
Right. That's right.
Of
yeah, you always have to with cybersecurity specifically. You always have to bring it back to the person.
Right.
Right. All it takes is one lapse of error in judgment, right, for something to affect an entire organization.
Right.
Now, when the payroll function of the use case that I just talked about, when they moved over to ADP, what really should have happened is they should have said, before we begin this migration, we're going to have a training exercise.
Right, it's that communication and education is critical.
Right.
It's critical.
Right, and we need to make sure that all of our employees know this is what sensitive information looks like. We're going to do our part to protect the information that we have for you. Please don't share your own sensitive information out.
And these are the three things that are going to occur. So first, this is going to occur, then this is going to occur. Then they know what's going to happen. So when they get this oddball thing, then they go, this isn't part of the process. Something's amiss.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, it's so important for organizations, again, to look at these seemingly innocuous business processes, like the move, the transfer of payroll to a cloud provider. That's just that made a lot of good, healthy sense for that organization to do that. But they never applied a cybersecurity risk lens to that effort.
Right. And that's why, but it seems as a business owner, you know, where do you start? It seems overwhelming. It seems like even when I'm trying to do good, I can still get bit in the butt. You know, like how do you help them even begin this process?
Sure. Well, I mean, it all starts with a simple conversation. You know, it's so the barrier to entry to manage the cybersecurity risk of your organization, that barrier to entry is incredibly low. All it takes is just have a conversation with the subject matter expert, right? And then take it to the next level from there. Right. I think it's so important, again, given that the probability or the likelihood of a cybersecurity incident happening to your organization is near certain, the impact that that could have over your organization, if not managed proactively, that impact is incredibly high. And I'm not talking about, you know, I tend to not talk dollars when I talk about cybersecurity risk. I talk about statistics like layoffs, right? I mean, these are people that are
lives.
Affected. These are lives. These are
and
families.
Reputations these of are, organizations.
These are reputations. Right. So I think that, you know, the numbers that you read in the headlines of this breach costs X millions of dollars, I can't wrap my head around that.
Right.
I can wrap my head around seeing pallets of cardboard boxes being moved inside an office building.
Right.
That's a picture I understand.
Right. And then if companies don't protect themselves, it's just like you said, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So now, I know coming up, the Department of Defense has Cybersecurity Awareness Month. They're trying to help.
That's right. So the Department of Homeland Security started this initiative a few years ago, and they've coined October as Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And every year they ramp up that awareness a little bit more and a little bit more. You know, I think that 5 or 6 years ago, cybersecurity seemed like a cool buzzword.
Right.
It didn't have that much awareness around it. Now I think that it's out there enough that people understand, to a degree, they understand what cybersecurity is. What I'm concerned with now is cybersecurity fatigue.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why it's so important. Bring it down to the person and how it affects you. And I think that Cybersecurity Awareness Month, as developed by the Department of Homeland Security, I think that they're doing a pretty doggone good job of raising the awareness level every year. And at UHY, you know, that's when we push the effort on a continual basis, because our clients matter to us, right? We look at our clients as people, not as dollars.
Right.
So we understand that this is their lives are affected by these types of cybersecurity events. So we make sure that they're aware across the board throughout the year. In October, we especially ramp up that effort.
Right. And it's about education, and there's events that talk about it. And it's an ongoing thing. You want to have an ongoing conversation about this year round, but in October, there's a lot of things happening.
That's right. That's when we're really reaching out to our clients and talking about it.
Now, Matt, can you talk a little bit about ISU Paragon? How are you serving folks?
Sure. We are have an office here in Atlanta and also Columbus, but we also make up, an ISU network out of San Francisco, about 160 national offices like ourselves. We're about number six in the nation as far as a small independent agents. We're all independent agents who own our own companies. About 1,500 staff members. We represent over 300 different carriers. And one of the things is, like I say, with $2 billion in sales, we have some buying power. So when we come into an office, it's not like we're not able to help them out. So any size, we can look at it and go over their whole entire policies. That's one of the things we talked about earlier, just a full policy review. Because you'd be surprised how many times companies have like I was mentioning before, been in business for
They bought it once, and then they think it's the same as it was.
Yeah, just it's all done. We're good to go until they have a claim, and then it's like, well, gosh, we didn't know we needed that. No one ever talked to us about that. And that's another thing. When we first meet, we discuss with them, these are our what we feel you need to have in place. You know, we can't make you get it, but we surely would think...
this is our recommendation.
Yes. On a scale of 1 to 10, this is a 9. This is a 2. So on that 9, we'll try and push it a bit, and then we finally back off because, you know...
It's their call.
Right. Correct. And then if something does happen, at least we know, hey, listen... we kind of told you, and unfortunately, this is what's happened. So we do take on an advisory role as far as what they would need.
And you want regular checkups, right? Because things do change.
Correct. And we explain that to them. If you hire a new, if you have a new location, if you have new contracts that come on board, a lot of our clients will send us, hey, we're working with XYZ company. Look at their contract, what they require on the insurance. How do we look?
Right. Or if they now outsource a portion of their business, things have changed now. Now that warrants another conversation.
Correct. And you also want whoever you're using, like I say, if I bring somebody on as a vendor to go work at a certain location, I want them to be the same level of insurance that I have.
Right.
Because if I have a $5 million cyber policy and they have a $1 million, there's a $4 million gap that I'm going to have to be hit on. So if the company that we push to put them into and it's that person's fault, they only have a million, I now have to file under my insurance to make up the $4 million. So that's it's another educational tool to explain to the person, the company, these are what you're going to need. These are the reasons why you've signed the contract. So now we're here to help you. If you would like it, we'll be here to work with you for however long. You know, we're here for the long haul, build the relationship. So, you know, at the end of the day, we try to make sure that they're protected and covered because it also covers us.
Right. Now, is there a sweet spot for you? Is there certain industries that you focus on?
IT industry is very heavily with, like, you know, placement agencies. You know, there's a lot of IT companies that will, you know...
So staffing firms?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Uh-huh. Yeah, staffing, really, really strong in that, the IT staffing firms. Basically, we're really, Atlanta is becoming more and more of a IT hub. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're definitely trying to get on the ground level to make sure we get a, you know, get in front of as many people as we can.
Especially in staffing. IT staffing, that's kind of a sweet spot for you personally.
Yeah, it's been very strong for us. We've got a number of clients here in the Atlanta metro area who represent very, very large clients in the Atlanta metro.
Yeah, there's no shortage of that.
No, no.
We're doing pretty good.
Yeah, and that's one thing that when it comes to cyber, you know, you are sending one of your temp to hires or one of your staffing agents into a firm to do something for you. And you need to make sure everybody's protected.
Right.
Because they're going to require protection for them. So you would have to do the same thing for yourself. And that's one thing we advise on.
So if you're an IT staffing firm that is has a need, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can reach me at my phone number is 404-658-0111 or Matt at isuparagon.com.
And that's the website?
That's my email.
But ISU Paragon?
Yes, sir. ISU Paragon is our website. They can look us up and see how we perform, and you know, we can go over, give them references on some of our clients.
And then you, that consultation, that is that a charge for that?
Or? No, sir. No, we don't charge for that because once they sign up with us, we do receive commission from the carrier.
Right.
So we're compensated that way. You know, there's a number of times we'll go in, bring all this to them, and they won't even won't hear anything back, and it happens. That's
but you've educated them.
Yes, more or less educated them to educate their current agents. So they'll go back to
building relationships.
Right. And that's the one thing we go in with. We're not here to sell you something. We're here to build a relationship. Right.
Now, Dave, UHY, what are you guys up to? What's the best way if somebody wants to learn more and maybe kind of educate their staff and communicate with their company about cybersecurity?
Sure. Well, first thing to do is, you know, you can certainly check out our website.
I know you have a lot of information about this.
Sure, absolutely. We have a whole section in on our website dedicated to internal audit, risk, and compliance, and cybersecurity is certainly a part of that. I can be reached directly at dking, that's K-I-N-G, at uhy-us.com.
So if we want to spoof you, that's where we send it.
That's where you send it. That's exactly right, Stone. That's well done.
King with a C. Well, thank you for putting this together. It's such an important topic, and it's one that, like you said, it's just a matter of time.
That's right.
I mean, everybody has a friend, at least, that has had their identity stolen at some point nowadays, I mean, sadly to say. So we all have to be more diligent and more aware.
Yeah. Well, thanks for helping us get the word out.
Well, thank you again for being part of the show, and thank you for putting this together. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Peyton, and this is Cause and Effect Radio.
Today's episode of Cause and Effect Radio has been brought to you by UHY Advisors. For more information, visit uhy-us.com.